content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Glamour Magazine, 17 Magazine, and this week from the May edition of Real Simple. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. Well, welcome back, everyone. Today is what day? May 24th, Thursday, 10 p.m., and you're awake. So our first article today is about, this is the fun part, hashtag live or hashtag live. New think. Is the wedding spending craze over? Price was the ultimate reason Carrie Toney, 32, and her fiancé Scott, 33, opted for an intimate wedding instead of a blowout. After picking a date and a local venue in Atlanta and whittling the guest list to 150, costs still hovered around $16,000. We were paying for everything ourselves and had just bought a house, she says. We wanted to spend our extra cash on making our home beautiful. After all, that's the place we'd be coming back to. It made me sick to think of spending so much money on 8 hours of fun. So they ditched their plans, booked a cabin in Colorado, and tied the knot in front of 10 friends in October. The price tag for the whole shindig, including their travel, accommodations, dinner, and drinks for their guests, the marriage license, the dress, and a photographer, $3,000, less than a quarter of the original estimate. We had frozen pizza and boxed wine the night before, Toney says. Being with friends in the Rocky Mountains made it all special. We wouldn't change a single thing. Lavish weddings still exist, even if you're not a soon-to-be duchess like Meghan Markle. But Toney and her husband are part of a growing number of millennials redefining nuptials as we know them. The generation is less likely to get married at all compared with previous ones, data shows. And those who do head down the aisle are starting to spend less and elope more, industry vets told Glamour. Why the reset? Couples want to start off debt-free. There have been several big relationship shifts for today's couples. If we look back at college-educated men in the late 70s, many would marry a less educated spouse, says Richard Fry, a senior researcher at the Pew Research Center. Increasingly, like marries like, meaning two people with college degrees get married, which brings a higher likelihood that at least one of them will have college loans, since nearly 70% of college-educated millennials borrowed cash for school. There's some evidence that student debt may be impacting choices they make about whether and when to get married, Fry says. They're more focused on school and work, and they're not as focused on partnering and starting families. Intimate weddings are the avocado toast of modern love, affordable with shareable photos. People also used to get married younger and poorer and then build a life together. Today, many millennials want to make sure they are financially stable first. Muriel, 31, was with her partner for 7 years before they went to a chapel outside of Austin to exchange vows in a small ceremony. We had a general goal that we wouldn't bring debt into the marriage, she says, sort of a blank slate, if you will. They spend their money on different things. Jenna Conway, Associate Director of Weddings and Special Occasions at Atlantis Paradise Island in the Bahamas, which has 19 wedding venues and hosted 215 ceremonies in 2017 alone, has seen a shift in how millennials plan their nuptials. They really want to spend their money on experiences, she says. They'll say, let's go balls to the wall on our honeymoon. And intimate weddings are the avocado toast of modern love, providing an affordable ceremony with the ultimate social currency, extremely high-quality, shareable photos. Yes, Instagram is part of the planning, says Jenny McFarlane, a wedding photographer and founder of Eloping is Fun in New York City. Business has been doubling every year, she says, of the firm's elopement services. A lot of people are doing this for the photos, tying the knot in front of breathtaking rock formations at Red Rock State Park. That's a dope-ass picture that's going to represent you for a really long time, she says. They have too many friends. Average age for bride in 2016, 27, compared with 20 or 21 in 1960. And older brides and grooms tend to have more friends, which makes for a ballooning guest list. The invitation list is one of the most dreaded aspects of wedding planning, says Samantha Burns, a licensed couples therapist and dating coach in the Boston area. Now you have to consider friends from different walks of life, such as your high school and college friends, your current coworker besties, the running club you go to on the weekends. There's only so much that you can afford, but cutting down your list could result in the end of a friendship or family drama. A tiny wedding or an elopement spares you the trouble. They need health insurance. In past generations, heading to the courthouse to say, "I do," was synonymous with a scandalous, unexpected pregnancy. Today, a more likely motivator is health insurance. Leaving a job and the health insurance it provided helped push Amy Brown, 28, and her husband Christopher, 33, toward a wedding. "My biggest concern was just the unknown," Brown says. "In the last few years, I've been in a car accident that resulted in injury and been hospitalized with a nasty case of the flu. I also take an antidepressant and medication for chronic migraines. And without insurance, I don't know if I could afford them." Even without medical concerns, Brown says, they probably would have had a low-key event anyway. "A traditional wedding," she says, "is just not really my thing." And that's probably the one universal truth about weddings. This day is about you and your partner and your love for each other. It isn't about how much money you can spend or tailoring a menu to accommodate your estranged cousin's girlfriend's oxalate-free dietary restrictions or forbidding a DJ from playing Bruno Mars. Tony raves about her wedding as often as the next newlywed. "I want to show people that it's not cheesy. You don't have to be married by Elvis," Tony says. "You can do something that's fun, beautiful, within budget, with your close friends or family. To get married, it doesn't have to be some big to-do. You don't need a hashtag." Our next article is entitled "Elevating the Conversation, Hashtag Think." It's time to talk about your money. History hasn't been kind to women and money. There was a time when a woman couldn't open a bank account or take out a credit card without her father's or husband's signature. Times have changed, but three facts remain. We earn less than men, we save less than they do, and we live longer. That's not a successful combination. So, we dedicated this issue to allowing things, all things money. As Melinda Gates, co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, says, "Once you have your own money, you can do anything you want. You are not dependent on someone else. Here's to financial freedom." How did a farm girl from Illinois go from racking up credit card debt to becoming one of the highest paid women in Hollywood? By working hard and deploying what she calls her fists of justice. Welcome to the Melissa McCarthy Fight Club. If you step up to a negotiating table in Hollywood, pray you never find yourself on the other side of Melissa McCarthy's fists of justice. That's how her husband, comedian, and Bridesmaids co-star Ben Falcone refers to the 47-year-old actress's fiery resolve to get the roles and production deals she wants and to make sure she's not being taken for a ride. The fists are not to be dismissed because they have helped her become one of the highest paid women in the industry. In the fight for fairness, everything else goes to a whiteout, she says. I always think, is the deal fair? Would you be asking the same thing of a guy in this position? And if the answer is, it probably wouldn't be happening to a guy, I'll dig my teeth in for months. On screen, McCarthy's characters often reflect this righteous indignation, which she balances with a down-to-earth sincerity, plus a few outrageous pratfalls. Her ability to throw herself into a role, often literally, is what makes her so funny as erstwhile White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer on Saturday Night Live, or amateur field agent Susan Cooper in Spy. She is utterly wild and totally relatable at the same time. When we meet, after a day of shooting in Malibu, she goes out of her way to put me at ease and make me laugh. As the sun disappears behind the hills, she asks if I need her help with a light so I can see my notebook. Unlike many of her A-list peers, McCarthy wasn't born Hollywood royalty. She was raised on a corn and soybean farm near Plainfield, Illinois, where she begged her parents for Gloria Vanderbilt jeans. My God, I wanted that swan on my hip terribly, she says. It was like, why? You don't need that. It was a great thing to grow up with the focus on the need versus the want. Her parents put their money toward 12 years of Catholic school instead. When she was 20, McCarthy moved to New York City to attend the Fashion Institute of Technology, FIT, or FIT, but soon dropped out to pursue a career in stand-up. She worked as a nanny and waited tables before cutting her teeth at the Groundlings comedy troupe in Los Angeles, where she met Falcone. Consistent TV work came her way, including 7 seasons of Gilmore Girls. But she didn't break out as a film star until 2011, when she stole the show as the oddball future-in-law in Bridesmaids. Within just 5 years, she was the third highest-paid woman in Hollywood, according to Forbes. In an industry where women tend to struggle if they don't live up to punishing physical standards, and men still dominate big-budget comedies, McCarthy has beaten the odds. I've gotten lucky, she says, and I've worked hard. She and Falcone now have their own production company, On the Day, which allows them to make the movies they're most passionate about. It also allows McCarthy to flex her skills both in front of the camera and behind the scenes. In their latest Life of the Party, which the couple co-wrote and co-produced, McCarthy plays a woman who goes back to college to finish her degree and get the campus experience she never had. This is, she points out, not that far from her own decision to leave FIT. Even without the degree, McCarthy ended up a designer. Her McCarthy 777 line, born from the frustration with not being able to find clothes she liked that fit her body, is currently sold in department stores and on the Home Shopping Network. That entrepreneurial spirit is something she and Falcone are trying to instill in their daughters. The girls, Vivian 10 and Georgette 8, are currently obsessed with making slime. My oldest daughter wants to start selling it. I was like, great, start a business. McCarthy says, it can't just be gimme, gimme, gimme. I talk a lot about we work hard for things. Like her parents, she and Falcone are splurging on their daughter's private school education, and they recently moved into a 9,000-square-foot Spanish colonial home. But McCarthy still knows a bargain. Earlier this year, the paparazzi snapped her shopping at a 99-cent store. After all, the fists of justice are motivated by more than the bottom line. Having a say in something means as much to me as getting a fair price, McCarthy says. I never want to lose my voice. Read on for her hard-earned lessons on getting heard, getting ahead, and getting paid. Exercise caution with credit cards. When I moved to New York at 20, I wish I did not discover that you can just get credit cards. I had a friend, Brian Atwood, the shoe designer, and I remember him saying, what are you going to do? Walk around New York in cheap shoes? You got to go. You go to Bergdorf. I was such a farm girl that I was like, I guess he's right. Brian, I really blame you. I couldn't afford anything in there, but they would just give you a store credit card. And so we were buying wonderful things. I was like, I work really hard. I'll pay this off in increments. No, laughs, you will not. Nobody is waiting for you to ask permission. The night after I got to New York, my friend said, you're going to do stand-up. And I said, all right, I was 20. I had no sense. I remember calling my mom and dad saying, I'm not going back to school. I was calling to ask for permission, even though I didn't really need it. I was over 18. They were like, okay, can you work at comedy? That was their thing. Work hard, grow a craft, become good at something. Years later, I asked my mom, what the hell were you thinking? And she said, you always thought you were going into fashion, and that seemed very unreliable. I figured you could probably do comedy if you worked at it. At some point, you have to start adulting. I remember when you could still get a $5 bill out of an ATM, and I couldn't get it because my balance was under $5. I would never quite have the money for rent, so I would call my mom and dad or my sister and say, this is how much I'm short. They never made me feel guilty because they knew I wasn't lying around doing nothing. And then I thought, I don't want to continue this pattern. I want to be able to pay the phone bill and not panic. I found a job as a production coordinator and got an actual check. It was the first time I stopped calling my parents, and it was an amazing feeling. Get in the game. I think you have to play. It's like this. You can stay in a local theater and work for the art of it, and that's great. Or you can say, I can make this my business. And if you want to do your business well, you'd better learn how to handle those negotiations, how and when to push, and when to lay off. And fight every step of the way up. There were some jobs when I was paid what most of my coworkers were or co-stars were. And then people who climbed the ladder with me were suddenly making 15 times what I made. I was like, wait. I thought, this is based on bullshit. This is not based on anything factual to me. I hated that feeling of not being in control and not being able to do anything about it. I think that feeling is what keeps the fight in me. You have to be willing to walk. When you finally are like, thanks so much for asking, but I'm going to pass, that's power. That's easier said as you get a little more power, but as you start up the ladder in whatever field you're in, you have to walk if people won't give you what you're worth. Once people don't respect you enough to give you what you're worth, they're never going to. Success is sweeter after a long struggle. When you spend 20 years working your butt off, you know yourself better. If you're handed everything you want at 19 or 20, you may actually believe all the people who are like, "You're amazing. I think I would have been probably cuckoo if I'd been successful at 18. I think the best thing I could have done was struggle until I was 30. I always assume every job is my last. 20 years of desperately trying to get a single job gets deep in your DNA. And luck helps. I have a very, very high level of gratitude. There is not a single day that goes by that I don't think, I can't believe I'm doing this. And there is no world where I confuse the fact that I've gotten lucky with the idea that there's something special about me. I think entitlement is a really, really scary thing to possess. For me, it's like, no, I've gotten lucky, and I've worked hard. It's okay to say yes for the money. I think everybody has a rate for when your gut is saying, why would I do that? That's not interesting. And so you name a crazy rate to make somebody go away. And then if they're like, sure, you will literally own the moon after this. You just have to shut up and do it. I've been lucky that in the last 10 years, I've only taken things I had the highest hopes for. But the time will come when I'll be like, does anybody need me to sell cheese slices? Because I'll do it. Just give me a paycheck, and I will work really hard to sell those cheese slices. If you pay people, they should really work for you. I give pretty strong advice to co-stars like, dig in deep and don't sell yourself short, and don't confuse someone working for you with them doing you a favor. You show up and do your job. It should be the same with agents, managers, the tax guy. Jennifer Coolidge, who is one of the funniest creatures on the planet and the reason I got my first job in the movie, or in a movie, taught me, the second they stop working for you, fire them. Don't think, I don't want to be a bitch. I don't want to cause trouble. If you paid for a bottle of water and then that person told you to just take off, you'd say, give me my water. I paid for it. I paid for it. Know when that fight isn't worth your time. Someone once demanded that we pay them or else they were going to go to the tabloids and make things up. We were like, but it's not true. And they were like, oh, I know, but it would be pretty terrible if that came out. Ben was like, let's not spend the next 10 years in court. I hate that we paid that person instead of fighting. Fists of Justice was not happy. But I know I saved 5 years of my life and a ton of money by not going to court. Eat the damn blueberries. I used to think that buying blueberries or an avocado was absolutely unnecessary. They were too expensive. Then, once I started being able to buy a pint of blueberries, I would not eat them. I just kept throwing them away because I was like, I should wait and do something special with them. For 15 years, I would just throw away blueberries and avocados. I can't tell you how much I wasted. At one point, I was just like, how about you just start eating blueberries? It's gotten weird. And speaking of avocados and blueberries, I'm not exactly going to be speaking of avocados and blueberries, but I am going to give you a really yummy spring bean and chard soup with toasted almond pesto recipe. And this is from the May edition of Real Simple. Take 1.5 cups packed fresh basil leaves, 1/4 cup toasted almonds, 1 large clove garlic peeled and smashed, 2/3 cup olive oil divided. And combine this basil, almonds, and garlic in a food processor. Pulse until finely chopped about 5 times. With processor running, drizzle in the 1/2 cup oil. Process until smooth. Then, use 2 carrots chopped about 1 cup, 2 stalks celery chopped about 3/4 cup, 3 cups vegetable broth, 1 teaspoon kosher salt, 2 15.5-ounce cans of cannellini beans drained and rinsed, divided, and 1 bunch Swiss chard, leaves chopped about 3 cups, plus 1 cup finely chopped stems. You want to heat remaining 2 tablespoons plus 2 teaspoons oil in a Dutch oven over medium heat, high heat. Cook carrots and celery, stirring occasionally but until tender, about 5 minutes. Add broth and salt and bring to a simmer. Using a fork, mash 1 can of beans in a bowl. Add mashed beans, whole beans, and chard leaves and stems to Dutch oven. Cook, stirring often, until chard is slightly wilted, about 2 minutes. Serve soup topped with pesto. Sounds so good, and it looks gorgeous. It's got the orange carrots. It's got the roots of the Swiss chard, which has red roots, so it's got some red, like, stems in it. It's got these beautiful, big leaves of Swiss chard. Oh, and you've got the yellow cannellini beans. And then next to that, you've got some French bread, and you've got the basil, basil pesto, toasted almond pesto, excuse me. That looks fantastic with the basil leaves in it. And man, it is ready to go. And it is so spring-like and fresh. So, go at it. Enjoy all the spring cooking. Enjoy all the spring flowers and plants. And what kind of birds have you heard recently? They're just everywhere. Do you wake up hearing the birds? It is just the coolest thing. I wonder what they're saying. Anyway, we have reached the end of our program today. The end of today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. I hope you make it a great week. All right? And happy Memorial Day weekend. And we'll see you next week. All right. Have a great week. Take care. Bye-bye. We'll